Hello, and welcome to another episode of Civic Conversations with Centaurs, the show that fosters community conversations on voter education and empowerment, sponsored by the Beta Alpha Omega chapter of Iota Phi Theta Fraternity Incorporated. I'm your host, Andre Moser. The views and information or opinions expressed on this podcast are solely those of our featured guests and does not necessarily represent the views of Iota Phi Theta Fraternity Incorporated. Wow, that was the jam from the 90s, from the New Jack City soundtrack. But one thing we don't want to do is go back to New Jack City. That was Mr. Christopher Williams from the 90s. But today, we have Mr. Christopher Williams from the 21st century, a cultural historian in the city of Fredericksburg. How are you doing today, Chris?
I'm doing well, Dre. Thank you for having me.
One thing, do you prefer to be called Christopher or Chris?
I prefer to be called Chris.
Chris, welcome to the show. We're glad to have you. And we want to talk to you today and let you tell our audience about some very important issues. Tell me a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'm a native of Spotsylvania County, Virginia, which is right outside of the city of Fredericksburg. I went to school, public school system in Spotsylvania County, through elementary to middle school and high school. And, you know, I landed, during my years in high school, you know, I was an athlete, but I had also an interest in cultural topics, Black history, and I had an affinity for music. So that is what kind of drew me to the career path that I'm in today. So when I left high school, I had a kind of a journey through college. So I went to James Madison University for my first 2 years out of high school. Ended up not doing well there, which is the story of so many students, particularly these new age students I deal with in higher ed right now. But after my after I failed out of James Madison University, I came back home and attended Germanna Community College for 2 years, and I transferred to Virginia Commonwealth University. And the reason why I stuck with school was because my mother kept her belief in me and knew that I was capable of being a better student. I was just in the wrong situation. So after, I transferred to VCU, I came back home for two more summers, and I graduated with my associate's degree in liberal arts from Germanna. And then I graduated from Virginia Commonwealth University with a degree in print journalism and a minor in Africana and African American studies. And I did a study abroad at the Cave Hill campus at the University of the West Indies as well. So, my education, at VCU really set me up into the career path that I'm in right now, which is being the assistant director of the James Farmer Multicultural Center here at the University of Mary Washington. And I've been in that role for the past 6 years now.
Great. So that quick story just lets people know that you just have to stick with it and you can make your dreams come true.
Absolutely.
Great. Tell our audience about some of the influencers that kept you going to get you to this place.
Well, I would say that the first one would be my mother, Jean Williams. The second person who was my earliest mentor was Dr. James Farmer. It's kind of full circle that I'm now working in the James Farmer Multicultural Center here at the university. I met him when I was 15 years old, and we had a very close relationship. I was present at the White House when he received his Presidential Medal of Freedom Award in 1998. I was one of three students chosen from the James Farmer Scholars Program. I was in that program from 7th grade until 12th grade. And we met here every other Saturday at the University of Mary Washington. Then it was Mary Washington College. So I've been around this campus for a very long time and in the city of Fredericksburg. The third person I would name would be Forrest Parker. Forrest Parker was the former director of the Multicultural Center. So he was the first, one of the first black men outside of my immediate family who really made me, you know, pay attention to why it was important to be black and to be proud to be black in this country. The fourth person I would say would be a combination of two people. Johnny P. Johnson, who was a famous artist here. He was also the first black professor here at the University of Mary Washington in the mid-60s. And then also I would, you know, say that Miss Eloise Chambers, who was, she was kind of like the director for the James Farm Scholars Program from in Spotsylvania County, the Parental Advisory Committee, and Dr. Vanita McCall, who was the director of the actual James Farmer Scholars Program, who was the first black professor, a woman professor here, received tenure in the English department at the University of Mary Washington in the 80s.
So you used the phrase, made you proud to be black. The role of people that came through and gave you that prominence seems fascinating. I know you named Dr. James Farmer. Off air, we talked about a story that it seemed very inspiring. Could you tell us a little bit, tell our audience a little bit about that story?
Yes. The story goes in 1963 during the March on Washington, Dr. Farmer was supposed to be, I believe, the sixth speaker that day on the March on Washington. But he was incarcerated in Louisiana for protesting in Plaquemine, Louisiana. At that point in time, he was run out of town by the Ku Klux Klan in a Hearst. So he was literally fleeing town. And when, you know, he eventually got arrested by the police, in a way it almost saved his life, to be quite honest. But he was supposed to be the sixth speaker at the March on Washington, and Floyd McKissick, who was also involved with the CORE, which was the Congress of Racial Equality, which was the organization that Dr. Farmer founded, co-founded in Chicago in 1942. Dr. Farmer organized the first sit-ins in the country's history in 1942 in Chicago. And most people think that the sit-ins originated in the Deep South. No, it originated in the Midwest. I remember Dr. King recalling that he had never, you know, encountered such vitriol and violence and segregation as the type of segregation he met in Chicago when he came in 1966. It caught him by surprise by how segregated and how racist the city was, more, even more so than what was happening in Alabama. So Dr. Farmer was considered one of the big six of the civil rights movement, and to have been in his life during the final years of his life is something that I will always treasure. I just remember so many stories that he shared with me when I used to be at his house. You know, sometimes I would push him around in his wheelchair around his pond, and we would talk about different things during his time in the movement, and also, you know, current events that were happening in the late 90s as well, that, you know, he just thought, wow, you know, we still have some work to do. Even though folks like him put in a lot of work into moving this country forward, I often say that many of these foot soldiers and organizers of the civil rights movement were really the founding mothers and fathers of this country. and really forced this country to live up to what is said on the founding documents.
So he was supposed to be the sixth speaker. Who ended up taking his position as that sixth speaker?
Floyd McKissick. He was also a prominent figure in CORE, Congress of Racial Equality, and he took his place at the podium that day, that afternoon, that hot August afternoon. It was August 28th, 1963.
So for our audience members who may not know who Dr. James Farmer is, please go and watch the movie The Great Debaters. That will give you more reference to who Dr. Farmer was. Moving along, can you explain the importance of the Fredericksburg Civil Rights Trail?
Yes. The Civil Rights Trail came about during a trip that I organized through the James Farmer Multicultural Center in the fall of 2019. The university was going to be celebrating Dr. Farmer's 100th birthday, which would have been January 12th of 2020. So the university financially backed the trip that I organized along with Dr. Sanford, who is the director here. We wanted to travel along the same route as the original 13 Freedom Riders in 1961 in an effort to desegregate interstate bus travel and really just travel all together in general. So we were fortunate to have the president's backing, and we had a bus of 43 students and 20 community members. And we embarked on that journey not knowing how it was going to transform us. I distinctly remember the stop in Anniston, Alabama, at the train station where the Klan laid in front of the bus and poked holes in the tires of the bus before it pulled out of the bus station, which allowed for the infamous attack, the bus bombing that happened in Anniston, about 2 miles outside of the bus, pulling out from the bus station. We were in the same spot as the bus when it was parked at the bus station before it left, and there was a mural, a tribute to all of the civil rights leaders who were part of the Freedom Riders, and detailing what happened that day. And it was just an overcast October morning and afternoon. I mean, you really felt like nothing had changed. It was just a certain eeriness in the air. And as we left from there, we actually went down the same road as the original bus went. And we had stopped right in the same area where the bus was bombed, and several of the Freedom Riders ran out of the bus, gasping for air. And to our surprise, there wasn't anything, you know, there to, you know, acknowledge what happened that day. Later on, we found out that they had did something about a mile up the road. But at that point in time, we were really upset. I was particularly offended that there wasn't anything marking that tragic day. So we called, myself and many of the students called many of the legislative people in the Calhoun County, which is the county where Anniston is, to, you know, voice our displeasure and why there should be something there that's much noticeable than what they have there now of that tragic day. And that was kind of for me, along with taking a tour of downtown Fredericksburg a month before, with Dean Cedric Rucker, talking about the Black history of the city of Fredericksburg. And I'll be honest, I felt a certain type of way because I didn't know many of the things he was saying during that outing. And I just said personally that I wanted to change this. So on that trip, Victoria Matthews was one of the people on the community bus. And when we were invited to the president's house 2 months later at Brompton, she and I struck up a conversation at the Christmas tree. And at the Christmas tree, we began talking about, you know, what would a civil rights trail look like here in the city of Fredericksburg? Because, quite frankly, Black history had not been talked about in the city of Fredericksburg in any meaningful way that was captured both on in the landscape or in print. So summer of 2020 comes around and the COVID-19 pandemic is spreading and tourism business has come to a halt. So that opened up, you know, Victoria with the opportunity to spend time on a project like this. And she remembered our conversation at the Christmas tree. And she reached out. It was July 17th of 2020. And she asked me, would I be interested in partnering with her on this project? And I said, yes. And I gave her kind of an idea of what I thought we, how we needed to proceed. So kind of fast forward, that was in the middle of, you know, the George Floyd protests, Black Lives Matter protests of 2020. That wasn't the reason we wanted to do the trail, but it was all in that moment where, you know, Black people, you know, were being, you know, just continuously attacked. You know, just seemed that summer was a summer where even before that, Ahmaud Arbery, you know, Breonna Taylor, George Floyd, so many other people we've lost to police violence. But, you know, this trail is important because the attack that not only we see today, but even prior to that, prior to today, you know, Black history has not been taught in any meaningful way, whether it's the Commonwealth of Virginia or other 49 states. You know, the Civil Rights Trail, the reason why it's a trail is because you can walk it. It is physically in the landscape. You cannot hide from it. You have to reckon with everything that you see, from the state historical markers to the wayside panels to the buildings that are part of the trail. You know, even on this campus, which is part two of the Civil Rights Trail, we're putting in 5 wayside panels dedicated to the Black history of this campus, from the campus desegregating all the way up to campus activism. Those will be in the ground before commencement in 3 weeks. So even walking this campus now, you're going to be having to deal, you know, with Black history and reckon with it within the landscape of this campus. So the importance of the trail is Black history is American history, first and foremost. You cannot deny what has happened to Black people in this country. In order for us to continue to move forward in the direction that we all may want to go in, first, you're going to have to deal with Black history and the understanding of it, and also dealing with people having to deal with anti-Blackness. Because before we can progress as a society, you're going to have to deal with anti-Blackness. And Black history is something that is sacred. Since we've got here, before the Mayflower, before Jamestown, we were traveling here and trading with indigenous people for hundreds of years. Our beginning does not begin in Jamestown in 1619 in Fort Monroe. It just does not. But the reason why we started our Civil Rights Trail in 1862 is because we were on the cusp of emancipating ourselves out of a physical and chattel slavery. We start with the story of John Washington, who self-emancipated himself out of what is now Foodie. He used to live on the second floor of the building. And when the Union soldiers first came to Fredericksburg, all the Confederates who were here in the city of Fredericksburg, who sympathized with the cause of the Confederacy and who believed in enslaving Black people, were running scared out of town. So his owner, which owned a bar in that same building, told, you know, John, you know, we have to leave town, go ahead and get things together, give people their drinks and whatnot. So he just coolly slipped out, you know, the side door of the bar on the first floor and self-emancipated himself out of slavery and walked across the Rappahannock River into Union lines. So for me, the importance of the Civil Rights Trail starts with the liberation of a black person. And it ends with the Black Lives Matter 2020 as we continue to liberate ourselves out of this oppressive system.
So in that story, you so vividly stated about on the bus, getting into Anderson, and it just felt like nothing had changed. So regarding that, how do you feel that the Civil Rights Trail can change people's direction and minds about critical race theory, diversity, and equity and inclusion?
Well, the Civil Rights Trail can help change people's minds, you know, by first of all, being open-minded to the history that has happened to black people in this country, both in segregation, you know, enslavement, segregation, desegregation. You can't change a person's mind if they have a closed mind. They have to be open-minded to, you know, absorbing and wanting to learn and not only just hear, but listen to the people who have experienced this type of racism and oppression and degradation and subjugation. And then once you can get past that and deal with the history and listen to the voices of the people who it has impacted, then we can start to have a conversation about, okay, critical race theory. You know, the Republican Party loves a good acronym to rally their troops behind. So you got CRT, now you have DEI. You know, those three letters, you know, the Civil Rights Trail, CRT. So if you deal with our CRT, you'll have a greater understanding of what critical race theory truly is. Now, critical race theory is truth be told, is a second year law school class dealing with how law has really been the way that oppression and racism has continued to thrive in this country through a legal lens. You know, that's what critical race theory is. You know, Kimberly Crenshaw and Derrick Bell were really the two authors of that, you know, phrase critical race theory. And two brilliant people, by the way. So diversity, equity, inclusion. Perhaps we need to come up with another thing that Victoria and I create called DEI, because we got CRT now. Now we need to focus on DEI.
Right, right. I mean, that's great. And the audience we want the audience to be able to embrace that and go back and, you know, once they listen to this, go back and listen to and research some of the people you spoke about. Going on, please share your thoughts on communities of color not getting out to vote.
Well, this is a conversation that I've been having with some of the students here at my job. I've heard some of them talk about, you know, I don't really feel like voting is going to really matter this election cycle. And these are students of color. And I have to give them a history lesson, you know, starting with, you know, who the senator is named after. This man fled tear gas, bullets being shot at him, being cow prodded, you name it, just so that we could try to have a seat at the table, let alone bring our own chair, like Shirley Chisholm used to say. If we do not get out to vote en masse, not just get out and vote, but get out and vote in mass, we could find ourselves in a pre-1960 America. That is not hyperbole. This is what the Republican Party is trying to do right now. Not only just with, you know, black people and other people of color, but women too. You know, you saw what Arizona did recently with passing a bill almost dating back to 1864.
Yes.
I mean, these people are not playing. You know, they have banned the right to protest in 3 states last week, Louisiana, Mississippi, and Texas. These people can't protest now unless, you know, they want to be incarcerated from jump. So your First Amendment is being stomped upon. Your right to organize, free speech, freedom to right to assembly, all these things. Next is going to be the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act. This is what they're coming for. And I also believe they're coming for the Brown versus Board of Education ruling. If we are not careful, we could see, like I said, we could go back to pre-1960 America. And that's not just for black people. It would be worse for us. Because when America catches a cold, we get the flu. We might catch COVID. if we're not careful, we don't show up to vote in November, November 5th. We can ill afford to be complacent and sitting on our asses. We have to get up and mobilize, strategize, organize people in your community, people within your own household sometimes, yes. Within your own family.
Yes.
We got to get people organized, being strategized and moving. Because if we don't, we stand to lose a great deal. And all of the progress that was made by the Golden Generation, as I call them, Dr. Farmer, Dorothy Height, Ella Baker, September Clark, A. Philip Randolph, Roy Wilkins, Whitney Young, all these people, the work that they put in, Bayard Rustin, all these people who put the work in, Dory and Joyce Ladner, all these people, Dion Diamond, I could keep naming people from the movement who as children, teenagers and young adults, Dr. Bernard Lafayette, John Lewis, who moved this country forward through their own volition. I'll be damned if I just sit on the sideline and watch that happen. You know, just from me personally and my own family, you know, we should be, you know, out there, you know, voting not just for ourselves, but for each other. It just bothers me to no end that people are just so complacent and only hyper-focused on one issue. It's never just one issue when it comes to an election. It's several issues. And yeah, you may not agree with the president on some things, but I would much rather have somebody who I can have a conversation with, who would be open to changing their mind, and a Congress who you can also engage with, versus one that doesn't want to hear anything you have to say, and they're going to just do what they want to do because it suits their agenda and moves their wants and desires forward and taking us back, not just one century, maybe two.
So you hear it right here. If you don't get out to vote and help your community and help yourself, you think you may have it bad now. But think about how they had it 2 generations ago. Less 60 years ago. So you heard it from the man himself. You need to get up, get out, and vote. Look in the mirror. Look at yourself deep. Because you are or could be the problem. So don't make yourself the problem. Make yourself the answer and the solution. So, Chris, before we leave today, we like to talk to our guests and have them give us a 5-star golden nugget. What would be your tidbit of information, wisdom, or change of action for our audience and our listeners today?
I would say that in this time that we're in currently, stand on business.
Stand on business. There you have it. Mr. Christopher Williams, or Chris, as he likes to be called. And as you heard the song play, I'm dreaming. Don't wake me. But we need to wake you up and stop dreaming. Thank you and have a great day.